Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today I have a special show because I will be interviewing members of the Chicago group The Marlins, who are up in the studio right now. So they'll be talking about their story and we'll be playing their records. So you should definitely keep tuned. It will be an interesting interview. So you guys want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Terry Thompson.
Okay.
Addis McCarroll.
John Davis Jr.
Okay. So first of all, thanks so much for coming up to the studio, telling your story.
Thank you.
So first of all, what part of Chicago are you from?
Southside.
Is the group all from the same area of Chicago?
Yes.
Like, what streets are you guys from?
76 in St. Lawrence.
Okay.
A couple of guys with some Dan and John. Where did you live? You lived there.
51st and Morgan.
Okay.
60th and Morgan.
Yeah.
And did you guys all get started singing about the same time?
Yeah.
How'd you guys get started? Did you go to school together?
Yeah.
What school did you go to?
Hirsch.
Okay. So what years were you in school?
We go way back for that.
Okay.
59 through 63, 64, around that time.
So were you in school around the same time that Richard Pickey and the Norvells were in school?
Yeah, right.
So
2 years ahead of us.
Okay. So did you get started singing? How did you get started singing?
Well, we just, it was just something we wanted to do. They have a friend named Eddie Johnson, and just as friends, we'd run around to different people's vestibules so you could get the echo, and we'd try to imitate the flamingos with the Heart of Stars Out Tonight and the Chihuahua Chihuahua.
Okay.
Like that. That's what we would do after school for fun.
Yep.
And
we got started that way.
And your cousin was a singer, right?
Yeah, Marshall Thompson of the Chalets.
Is he older than you?
Yes, he is.
So how much older is he than you?
He's
a few
4 years older than me.
So was he like an inspiration for you too?
I didn't even know he was singing. It was just something I wanted to do. I come from a musical family.
Okay.
My mother's a piano player. My dad was a drummer.
Okay. And did you actually, I know Marshall actually played drums originally too. Did you play drums also?
Yeah, my dad taught Marshall at Shylights to play drums. But me and my dad, we went to Oliver Coleman, who was a protege of Captain Diet.
Okay. And so were you playing drums before you were singing?
No.
Okay.
I was singing and playing drums basically almost simultaneously. I was taking lessons, and I was also recording. I recorded with Bill Shepherd and the Shepherds.
Okay.
And that was a singing group.
Yeah.
That made me want to sing.
So you actually played drums on some of the Shepherds records?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So were you like on Tragic, or do you remember what records you played on?
Whatever their first one was.
Okay. And so were you still in high school when you played drums on the Shepherds records?
Yeah.
And were all of you guys, was the Marlins the first group you sang with?
Mm-mm.
How'd you get started, John?
Singing gospel.
Okay. So were you singing in church?
Yeah, we used to do little things in church, but this was way back in 1952.
Okay. So you were really young.
Yeah, and we kept listening to all the doo-wop groups, so we switched over.
Okay.
And started singing doo-wops. But when I got with Terry and them, they had a group. Wasn't that sweater you used to wear?
That was just a musical sweater.
And I met Terry.
Majestics. So you're saying you had a group called the Majestics before John joined?
Right.
Yeah.
And were you all the same year in high school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Majestics, did you have them in grade school, or were you in high school you also had the Majestics?
No, high school.
Okay. Yeah, I interviewed somebody else who sang with a group called the Majestics. Walter Coleman was his name. Was he in your group?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. So so you had the Majestics, and then how did John join your group? What was the story?
He was at school.
And
we were in same classes in some cases.
Okay.
And he wanted to sing, and It starts at recess. We'd be singing during recess. Yep. Then we sing after school.
Yep.
The next thing you know, I was dragging him to my house.
Okay.
Out of the basement with the little piano. Yeah. You know.
Tara and I went to grammar school together also and went to the same church.
Okay.
And I was always there with him, but I didn't. I just had aspirations to sing with a group. But he found out I could hold a note. I was in tone deaf, and I could hold a note. So that's how I started singing background.
Okay, so Terry had a group called Majestics, and then you guys joined a different. You formed a different group.
Right.
So the Majestics just broke up, and you formed the Marlins.
There were four of us there.
So who were the original members of the Marlins?
Ed Snyder, John Davis, Cheryl Henry, and myself, Terry Thompson, and Addis McCarroll.
So there were five members?
Five of us.
And did all those people, were they all the same year at Hirsch also? Did they all go to Hirsch?
No. I went to Tilden.
Okay.
And Cheryl went to Hirsch, but she was a year under me.
Okay. So about what year did the Marlins form?
63.
Before that was the Norvells.
Yeah.
So your group was called the Norvells?
Yeah,
what was the story? So, but there was already a Piggy's Norvell.
There was a controversy on that name. Yeah.
So what's the story with that?
The story with that is this. The bass singer of the Soulstirrers, his wife's name is Norvell.
Okay.
And she gave us the name.
She named our group.
Yeah. Her son, Jesse Carley,
used to play drums with us.
Okay.
And she founded our group.
His father is Jesse Farley Sr., one of the founding members of the Soulstirrers.
Yeah, he was the leader of those Soulstirrers.
So whose father was
Jesse Farley's?
Jesse Farley.
Okay. So then, so you were originally called the Norvells.
Right.
And then I know Piggy's group was called the Belvederes in school, and they took the Norvell's name.
Right. So then when we realized they were also the Norvells, that's when we went to the Marlins.
Okay. How'd you come up with the name the Marlins?
I remember from my part, if you ever see the fish, it's a beautiful fish.
Okay.
And then I was looking for something that we didn't have to continue to change the name. And that's why I took it.
Well, that's why I took too, I guess.
Definitely a unique name.
Now, music teacher, her daughter's name was Mary Ann.
Right.
And she had passed.
What was her name? What was the music teacher's name? That's what I've been trying to figure out for the longest.
Our voice teacher.
She played piano.
Right. And she had a studio downtown
in Jackson.
Jackson, right. I
didn't think her name for nothing. I've been trying very hard.
So it's definitely a unique name. Like a lot of groups had names after birds, but no one else had a fish name.
It merged to the Marlins. Yeah.
Okay.
'63.
So and then around you had all the members in the group at that time.
Yeah.
And then around that time, you actually ended up cutting a record called "My Heart Is Yours" and "The Break."
Right.
And
Tower Records.
So whose record label was that?
Ed Cody's.
Okay. And I think there's a guy named Kirk Hightower on the record.
Yeah, he was the A&R.
Okay. How did you get with him and how'd you get on the label?
Well, we actually got with Ed Cody. Ed Cody found us through the people who were representing us at the time. And
So you had a manager, you were saying, at the time?
Well, yeah, we hadn't necessarily signed with them. We were just working with them. And Ed Cody introduced us to Mr. Hightower as his A&R person. And so then we worked with him.
Okay, so how long had the group been together at that point?
Under that name, about a couple of years.
Okay, so When did the record come out? Around 65, something like that?
No, it came out in 63.
Yeah,
okay. 63. So you had been together as the Marlins since like 61 then?
Yeah.
And were you still... So what were you doing when you were together? Were you like doing talent shows, that type of thing?
Oh, yeah, we did all that.
Yeah, we did some talent shows. Okay. And, you know, we were still coming out of school too, so we had homework.
Okay.
Along with that.
Addis said something else. We work with, who do we work with, Addis? The one wear the glasses.
Oh, Jim Lonsberry? We just mm-hmm. recognized mm-hmm. Jim Lonsberry.
Hey, Jim Lonsberry.
You know, some of the...
Lucky Cordell,
WVON, when they was going strong.
And we did a show for Herb Kent.
Was that before you had the record or after the record?
It was after the record.
Well, it was after the record. But before the record, we used to do like the Harvest Moon Festival.
Yeah.
When they used to have that in the fall or whenever had that. Any local contest, we would get in it.
Okay. Were there groups that you did shows a lot with that were like rival groups, anything like that?
Yes. we did a talent show down at the Park Manor Church. I think it was a controversial group. Was Richard McGee's group, the North Valves there, or was another group from Hirsch? And we ended up battling them out, and we won it.
Right.
Was that Henry Ford and the Gifts were from Hirsch also?
No, they were.
Okay.
They had a girl in it, and
right.
A couple of guys. You knew all,
Natalie.
And I didn't know the name of the group, though.
Right.
Okay, well, let me play the record and we can talk more about how it came to be.
Okay.
So, before we play it, there's two sides on the record. There's My Heart Is Yours, which is a nice ballad side, and then there's The Break, which is like a dance mm-hmm. record. I'm going to play the My Heart Is Yours side.
Okay.
What was the intended A side of the record?
The Break.
Okay, so it was supposed to be like a dance.
Right.
Dance.
It was a dance era.
Okay, well, I'll play My Heart Is Yours, and then we could talk some more. So this is the Marlins with their very first record from, I think, 1963 with My Heart Is Yours. Okay, that was just the Marlins with their first record called My Heart Is Yours. So can you guys tell me who sings lead on that record?
Cheryl Henry.
And there's four guys singing backup?
Yes.
Who are the four guys again singing and what parts do they sing?
Ed Snyder sang bass. Addis McCarroll sang
baritone.
Terry Thompson sang second tenor. And John Davis sang first tenor.
Okay, and when that record came out, you said The Break was the A side.
Right.
Did that get play in Chicago?
Oh yeah, a lot of play.
And did they ever flip it over and play the My Heart Is Yours side?
I heard it one time. Not near as much.
Okay.
I heard it one time.
So on the My Heart Is Yours side, it's kind of sounds almost like the Miracles. Were you inspired by them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was inspired by everything by Motown.
Okay. And on that record, you actually wrote it, and there's another guy, Ronald
Logan.
And he has writing credits on a lot of records. What was his affiliation with the group?
He was, me and him were writing, so he was a writing team.
And plus he could sing second.
Yeah, he sang sometimes too.
Yeah, he was second tenor.
Did he sing at shows or just on record, some extra backup or what?
No, just extra backup.
Okay. And so was that one of the first records you ever wrote?
Yeah, that was one of the first.
Okay. Was it easy to start writing, or you just came natural to you?
It kind of came natural.
Okay. So the other record, The Break, we were talking about, is a dance record. So was there actually a dance called The Break?
Yes, yeah. At the time, yeah.
How did you do The Break?
Very careful.
shake, slide to the right.
Okay.
That's how you do it.
So did that dance actually catch on, like kids were doing The Break at the time?
They seemed to like it wherever we went to do it.
The white kids did.
Yeah.
Okay.
We did a lot of record house with Jim Lounsbury, like in Wilmette, Winnetka, all in the north suburbs.
Okay.
And they knew about it.
We did a gig for him, and Roy Orbison was on the show.
Okay, what year was that?
That's been 63, 64,
somewhere around
whenever the first version of
The Break came out.
No, I'm talking about the Roy Orbison song.
Yeah,
Pretty Woman.
The first version.
The first version.
So how did you get hooked up with sort of doing like the suburban circuit for like
Jim
white kids?
Jim Lounsbury set it up.
So how did you?
The guy at the Phillips Station.
Yeah, Harvey.
Mr. Harvey.
Harvey
was our manager, and our music teacher, I can't remember her name.
She was spending money.
But she had her connections by being a music teacher,
and
we was able to get those record hops.
So your high school music teacher you're talking about?
No, she was more of a professional
music teacher.
Like, okay.
House teacher after we got into the music field, and I think Mr. Harvey got in touch with us some kind of way.
Yeah, she had a music studio downtown.
Exactly.
And we would go down there to rehearse and have vocal coaching.
Had you guys graduated from high school by then?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
So you started, so at the time you graduated and you were just doing like a lot of record hops and that type of stuff, and you were doing like a suburban circuit for like a lot of white kids pretty much.
Yep.
And so were there other groups, like other black groups from Chicago on the same circuit as you?
Yeah, Henry Ford and the Gifts. That's one I remember real well. And
Johnny Taylor Jr. or something like that. We did a gig up there.
Yeah, but he was...
From Chicago. He was more of a blues singer.
Okay.
He imitated Johnny Taylor.
And how often were you doing like these record shows in the suburbs?
On the weekends.
Okay.
Friday, Saturday.
And did you ever go on Jim Lounsbury's TV show?
Yes.
Okay. Did you go on it a lot?
No, we were on a lot of it.
A couple times.
Did you do The Break on the show?
Yes, we did.
Okay. So a few years later, you cut your second record, and it was called The Very Next Time and Come Back.
Right.
So how many years went by before you cut that record?
Actually, the session, we cut all of the songs. They released it a year and a half later.
Okay, so all the songs were cut at the same time,
right.
And the Duran record was just released a year later.
Right.
So how did you get with Duran Records? I know your cousin's group, the Shylights, were on Duran.
I was producing my cousin's first record as the Shylights.
Okay.
I'm So Jealous.
Okay.
And we tagged, Come Back?
Mm-hmm.
Come Back and another song to make the whole session, and that's how we ended up. And Mr. Shelton, that's my uncle.
James Shelton is your uncle. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that at the time you cut My Heart Is Yours, you were also producing I'm So Jealous for the Shylights.
Right.
Okay, and then so James was interested in putting out your record too.
Right.
And so the record you released, both sides are really nice. One side is called The Very Next Time, and the other side is called Come Back, which was the A side?
The Very Next Time.
And on that side, Cheryl sings lead also, right?
Right.
And you sing lead on the other side?
Yeah.
On Come Back?
Mm-hmm.
I sang it.
Yeah, I think so.
I'll play it a bit. Let me play.
I sure didn't sing, Lee.
That one, Julie. That's yours.
I'm going to play the very next time we can talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is the Marlins with their second record called The Very Next Time. Okay, that was just the Marlins with their second record called The Very Next Time, and that was recorded at the same session as their first record, My Heart Is Yours. So, and singing lead on that is also Cheryl Henry Wright.
Right.
So, one thing that's interesting is it was unusual to have like a female with sort of male backing group in Chicago. There weren't many groups with that lineup. Was it somebody's idea to do that? Or
no. Like I said, once again, that was a Motown influence, I think, at the time.
It was like Claudette Robinson, kind of.
Mm-hmm. The Girl's All Right With Me by the Temptations had been out. And I think that was our influence, slight influence.
Another reason was, too, Paul left us and got with Frank Clark now.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed a lead singer. Remember we did the talent show across the street at the church at your house?
Okay.
Across the street from your house?
Yeah.
Who was Paul? You said Paul.
Paul Burns. He's our bass singer before we get Ed Schneider.
Okay.
He sang with our Frank Clark now.
Oh, that group, the New Concepts, Frank was in? Okay.
Yeah. He was their bass.
Okay. I forgot his name. So you're saying he was originally your bass singer, and then later he sang with the New Concepts.
Yeah.
But he's not on the record. He's not on your record. Ed is on the record.
Right. Yeah, Ed is on the record. Ed got with him.
You know, we also chose Cheryl. She had a nice personality.
Yep.
And she had a lot of riffing ability, and she just worked out better that way. Very personable.
And so. When you did shows, what were your shows like? Like, what type of stuff did you do at shows?
We had a variety of things. Cheryl allowed us to not be limited in whatever it was we tried to do.
Yep.
Okay. So, like, what type of material did you do at shows? What type of songs did you sing? Did you sing Motown songs?
We tried to do R&B things, and we had a few things that had a little jazz influence.
We did some Mary Wells' stuff.
Right, and Mary Wells, right.
And don't forget something got a hold on me.
Okay. So that second record, The Very Next Time, did that get any play in Chicago?
We don't know.
Okay. So basically not much if it did.
Right.
Okay. So what was the story? Was it just that the Shy Lights were bigger and they got more promotion at the time?
I think our song was played overseas, and we didn't know that much about it.
Okay.
And we pushed the Shy Lights here in the United States.
Okay.
And that kind of launched their career.
Yep.
We got Mercury Records picked them up, and they never looked back.
Okay. So that ended up being the last record that the Marlins released, although I know that there's supposedly a tape of one other song, but I don't remember what it was called. Some guy who worked in the studio had some tape of some other song. I'm trying to remember what it was called.
Yeah.
But so did you record more material at that one session?
Yeah, we recorded, it was about what they call 3 or 4 songs in the can.
Okay.
But there was a problem between Ed Cody and Mr. Hightower.
Okay.
And we suffered.
but James Shelton got a hold of 2 of the songs, though, at least, right?
No, the 2 that James Shelton has is what we ended up doing on the 8-song session with us and the Shy Lights.
Yeah.
We did 4, and the Shy Lights did 4.
So did you cut the Duran record at the same time as the Tower record?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying before that they were in the same session, but you're saying you did it later.
Right.
So at the time you did 4 songs, and the Shy Lights did 4 songs in that same session, and I'm So Jealous and the Mix song were
right
in that session.
Yeah.
And then you said with Ed Cody you cut like 5 songs or something like
5
that.
5 or 6 songs.
And you only released 2 of them.
Right.
Okay. So, but one thing you did was you did do backing for some other artists.
Right.
Like, there's a guy who I met a few times. At the time, his name was Bruce Marr, and he said you guys sang on his records, mm-hmm. and that was for James Shelton also.
Right.
And then you also sing on a record by Cheryl Swope.
Mm-hmm.
And it was her first record, Let's Get the Show on the Road.
Right.
What's the story with that? How did you do backing for that?
I'm not really sure, but somebody brought her to us and asked us for we background.
Okay. I think it was produced by Deke Atkins. Did you?
Right.
Okay.
And Deke Atkins was a promotion man, and so we were eager to work because we wanted him to work with us, too.
Okay. And so did you do stuff with him in addition to that track?
Yeah, under Clarence Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what other artists did you sing back and for?
I know we did some stuff for Ral Dotter, but it never was released.
How did that come about?
When he picked us up, and took us to his house studio. He claimed that he was looking for, he liked our low harmony, and he was trying to recreate the Jordanaires like the Elvis Presley.
Okay.
And he had us doing things like that.
So when, was that like when you were doing the shows in the suburbs? Is that where you, how you met Ral? Like where'd you meet him?
No, he found us.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was through Mr.
Harvey.
Harvey, too. Yeah.
Okay, so you did some backing for him that was
right.
not released.
Right.
And there's no other artist you remember singing backup for?
No, not right now.
Did you ever do any recording besides you said you recorded 3 more things for Ed that weren't released, and then 4 more for James Shelton, or 2 more for James Shelton that weren't released. Did you guys ever do any more recording?
No.
So how long did the group stay together after the Duran record was released?
We stayed together till I went to the Army, which was
65.
Okay, so you said so the group was together all in all from like 61 through 65, something
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Cheryl Swope record came out maybe a little bit later than that too, like maybe 66 or something like that.
Right.
So did the group just break up because you left for the Army? Was that the main reason?
Yeah, we kind of got misplaced. People had us got married.
Yeah.
And
And
then, we had jobs.
Okay.
8-hour jobs and everything. And it just kind of got us displaced.
Okay. But one thing is I know you, Terry, continued to be involved with music.
Yeah.
And I know Cheryl was later in the South Shore Commission.
Right.
She's the person singing on We're on the Right Track.
Right.
Did any of you other guys stay involved with music after that?
Yeah,
I stayed involved with music. I played with a band for about 70 to about 73.
What was the name of your band?
Chicago TNT Band.
Okay. And there's a record released on Duran. It's like Samuel Moore and the Shy TNTs. Do you know if that's your band?
I don't think that's me.
Okay.
No. I think that was the name. A lot of guys used it, Chicago TNT Band, you know, and I just picked it. I didn't know anybody else was using it. But
I'll record it for you. Maybe you'll recognize it. Because it's coincidental that it was on Duran also.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's where I got it from.
Okay. So what did your band do?
We did mostly just gigs here in the city. I played the Grand Ballroom.
What instrument did you play?
I played rhythm guitar, lead guitar. And my bass, the bass singer in our singing group was the bass player in a band.
Was it Ed?
Ed Snyder.
Okay.
And I was able to do some gigs with Cheryl and John. We did one gig we did out in the suburbs, really the Boondocks. What was that place we used in the service or came out? The Grove Supper Club. We had a singing gig down at Whiskey and Go-Go.
We were at the Whiskey and Go-Go first.
And our owner of a club out in Street, Illinois, saw us and liked us, so
he hired
us to be out there for like on the weekends for like a month.
Okay.
And with that connection, I was able to continually go back there every so often and do a gig. Mm-hmm. And the first time, I don't think Terry was in the service, but he got drafted in the service. I was able to get a gig out there again, and then he came home on leave and did the gig with us.
Okay.
That was one of the nice gigs that we did, but we worked all over the city of Chicago, north side, south side.
Yep.
There was a gig, and they wanted us, we would be there.
Okay. And and what kind of music did you play? Was it like funkier because it was the early 70s?
Well, mostly rhythm and blues, and, you know, we tried to learn the top 10. Was on a hip parade, you know, so
okay.
Current. And we mixed it up pretty much with everything. Little blues, little jazz, country. I mean, it was a hit, we played it, you know, because that's what you have to do when you're doing a live show.
Cool.
Or a dance. I did a lot of dancing. You have to play what the people wanted to hear.
Okay.
What was current, so that's what we did.
And you were you played through the early 70s pretty much?
Yes, yes. Till about 73. I had a gig. I bought my house in 1973. I moved in. And I had a gig the same night. And after I did that gig, that's about did it for me.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to work a day job and
play at night
and do rehearsals, so
yep.
I had to let it go.
So John, was that the last thing you were involved with too? Was singing occasionally with
us? I started dealing with some young guys, but I had to let them go.
Okay.
Couldn't deal with them. They were too young.
So you said you tried to form a new group with some younger guys.
Yeah, with some younger guys, and the guy could play too. Young guy, he was about 17 years old. He could play anything. But they were just in the wrong line of work for me.
What was the name of your group with the younger guys? Did you have a name?
No, we didn't have no name. I was just trying to get them together. They didn't know how to sing and play at the same time.
Okay.
You know, they had to watch the guitar when
they
were playing.
I still can't do that.
So finally, Terry, you had a long career. Were you involved with a lot of music? So you mentioned some people you were involved with first, but you mentioned some people we were involved with, but first it'd be cool if you talked about you did some stuff with late DJ Richard Pegee.
Right.
So can you talk about how you got involved with working with Richard?
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, we met initially in school.
Okay.
And we had a common goal. We were both producers and things like that. And so he came to me one day and he said, I need some music for a commercial. And he said, I need something upbeat. I gave him what I had. And the next thing he said, we got it. And it turned out to be the Funtown commercial.
Okay.
And that must have played for 5 or 6 years.
But you did stuff with him earlier than that, right? Like,
yeah, we were...
Like you wrote the Brothers and Sisters.
Brothers and Sisters.
So you first got involved with him in the 60s, right?
Right.
And so he just knew you from school when you...
Right.
So I brought some of the stuff that you wrote for him. like you wrote Nobody's Gonna Turn Us Round,
right,
for the Brothers and Sisters, and you wrote a record, it was like a DJ rap type record you did on Roy Wood.
Right.
So let me play Nobody's Gonna Turn Us Round, and then we can talk some more.
Right.
So this is the Brothers and Sisters, which was written by Terry Thompson and Richard Pickey. This track is called Nobody's Gonna Turn Us Round. Okay, that was just the Brothers and Sisters with Nobody Is Going to Turn Us Round, and that was written by Terry Thompson, who is up in here, and you were working with Richard Pickey on that track.
Yes.
Did you actually play on that track, too?
Yes, I did.
So you played drums on that track.
Right.
I know he used the South Shore Commission on a lot of his tracks, but that wasn't the South Shore Commission playing on that. Did you ever play with them?
No.
Okay. But you said that you played drums at VJ Records, too?
VJ Records.
When was that?
I'm not sure, but I work with Jerry Butler.
Okay. Did you play on some of his records?
He'll Break Your Heart and Find Yourself Another Love.
And were you still in high school when you were doing that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got into business real early.
Right.
And then, so another person you worked with was obviously James Shelton. You talked about how you produced those Shy Lights records.
Right.
And then your name is on some other stuff. Your name is on as, I think, a ranger on a record by the Flares, when I interviewed one of the Flares.
Okay.
It was a track called Where You Live and You Got to Steal It.
Okay.
Do you remember that track, those tracks?
No.
Okay, well, they're nice records.
Okay.
But so you were actually a ranger on it, though. So did you go to school to learn, like, arranging?
Yes.
Okay.
I studied under Johnny Pate.
Okay, so you learned the best.
Yeah.
So, and then there's another group which your name is on the record, and I think your writer, Ronald Logan, his name is a girl group called the Sandells that also came on Duran, but you don't remember much about them.
No, I don't remember much about them.
Okay, yeah, the tracks were called "Darling, I'm Yours" and "What Do I Care About You." So maybe once you hear it, you'll remember something.
Okay.
And then you said you worked with Clarence Johnson also. How did you get hooked up with Clarence originally?
Initially, I was his drummer.
Okay.
And it grew from that into arranging and producing.
Do you remember what records you played drums on of his?
Most of them.
Okay. And then, did you play on Love Lights records?
Yes, I did.
And then, what records did you end up arranging and producing for him?
Love Jones.
Okay.
And they had some other titles on their first and second album. I just don't remember them right now.
So you're saying other Brighter Side of Darkness stuff?
Right.
And you did some Love Light stuff?
Right.
I know one arranger he used a lot was Johnny Cameron.
Right.
Do you remember working with him at all?
Yeah, as a drummer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so how long, so you worked with Clarence for a while too also.
Yeah.
What other musical stuff did you do around that time?
I worked with Charles Stephanie.
At Chess?
At Chess.
You were playing drums or were you arranging also?
Playing drums.
Okay.
Yeah. And Richard Evans.
Okay.
And, those are the ones that I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long were you involved with, arranging and playing drums? Did you do it throughout the 70s pretty much?
Oh, yeah. I still do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you worked with Richard Evans at Chess. Do you remember some of the other stuff you did later in the 70s?
No.
Okay. but the last records you ever sang on were with the Marlins, is that right?
Right.
And then Cheryl Henry, who was lead of your group, ended up singing with the South Shore Commission. Do you know how that ended up happening?
Yes. I introduced her to them because she wanted to work. And we were working clubs like the Checkmate Lounge and the, Green Bunny.
Okay.
And everything. And they needed a singer. And I introduced her to them, and they fell in love with her right away.
Okay. So do you remember, did she join in the early 70s?
When did they put out Free Man?
Free Man was 73, 74?
Yeah, probably so. That's right. Okay. That's the clip I got. Because she went to California with them, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, well, let me play another record that you guys did, and we can talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is the B-side of The Very Next Time, and this is the track that Terry sings lead on, which we'll hear in a second. This track is called Come Back.
To me,
come back to me.
I need you.
Okay, that was just the Marlins with Comeback, which is the B-side of their second record, and that actually had Terry Thompson singing lead on the record. So we were just talking about how what everybody did after the Marlins disbanded. And Terry, you're still involved with music, right?
Yes.
What have you done recently?
Well, one of the last biggest things I did was musical director for the Stardust Review at Kennedy King. And the reason I mention it, they called me and they wanted to play the last 6 weeks, and it lasted 9 months.
Okay. when was that?
About 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're still even playing drums, right?
Yeah, I'm still playing drums.
Like you played drums that like a week ago at it was like the with Willie Henderson's band,
right,
the Chicago Soul
right.
event.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's funny because there were all those British people there, and they probably would have known your record if you had said something.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know if Cheryl stayed involved with music at all?
Yes.
Okay.
She sings when she can.
Okay. Does she live in Chicago?
No, she lives in California.
Okay. And has anyone else done any music stuff since the 70s?
No, the last gig I had was in July 73, and that was it when I moved into my house. Mm-hmm. This Christmas, my youngest son brought me a new electric guitar, so he's been bugging me to start practicing again.
Hopefully something will come out of it.
I hope so.
Okay, well, thanks so much, guys, for coming down and telling your story. It was an interesting story. So do you have any last words for the radio audience?
Well, I'd like to say if anybody has any musical talent, singing or playing, don't stop doing it. Stay with it. Stick with it because you never know what might come on years later. Might get a break. So stick with it. Keep your skills up to date.
That's good advice. Okay, this last record I'm going to play is the dance side of your first record, which is a side that got play in Chicago.
Right.
This is The Break.
Well, I've got to dance.